For January 11th, 2019, we talk about Tetris Effect, Stellaris, and we ask you what the worst game you ever beat was. Also, if you want to vote in our Title of the Year contest, go to our Facebook page and vote by Monday, the 14th. Welcome to Level 269. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome to 2019. It's already weird.
Yeah!
Oh, thank you for understanding us being away. It's super inconvenient when holidays fall on Mondays for us. But we're back. We're happy to be here. It's going to be a good time. We're rested, I think. Well, we're not. We've been working
Except
hard.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In case I kind of lose it, I've been recording for 6.5 hours already.
Oh my
God. Yeah. It's almost a full-time job now, and I don't know how I feel about that. No. So yeah, big new stuff happening. There's so much right now. How's everybody doing?
Well, I did a 20-mile ruck on Saturday night. I went to sleep on Sunday at 3 a.m. And then today I woke up at 3 a.m. to go teach fitness. So I have been up and I've had a weird schedule. So my voice probably sounds different. Mm-hmm. I'm all right. I just have not had a whole hell of a lot of sleep.
Well, how'd the ruck go?
It was fine. It's basically, okay, Go Ruck, which is the company that runs a lot of the rucking events and also sells rucks and other rucking gear, published a resolution ruck, which is a 50 miles by January 15th challenge. So my rucking club, like there's lots of people who are, preparing for different events, such as the Star Course, which is a 50 to 60 mile, to be honest, mm-hmm. Rucking event that's going to be happening in Houston in June, I want to say it is, and other things like that. So there are a lot of people who are building their miles up for that. So there were people already doing heavy mileage anyway, but we had a couple of newer people come out for this ruck, and they made it for about 12 miles, and then they had to stop. Like one of them just got shredded, like his traps were dead and he didn't have a hip belt to have any of the weight transferred to his hips. And, like he is a veteran. And so he's out of, he's deconditioned. He has not been in the military for a while and he's deconditioned physically. Mm. So he was like, oh yeah, 20 miles, no big deal. Oops. No,
yeah.
You haven't been doing that in a long time. You're not ready for that. Just yeah. to pop out of the blue. You're not in the shape you were, and then, another lady, she got her foot wet and her sock wet and then ended up like she had a spare pair of socks, but then she somehow managed to, like when she was pulling them out, ended up dumping her water bladder on them.
Oh.
And so they got wet.
Was her foot just one big blister by the time she stopped to address it?
Well, she stopped after it had, been like a couple of miles like that. And then, like after a couple more slower miles, because, that's when everybody started hurting. Mm-hmm. Then they ended up calling an Uber and they were just like, okay, yeah. Well, we're going to call an Uber and go back to the car. But I continued on from there and, along with one of the other guys in the rucking club. And we just had this great long conversation. It was wonderful. And there's also a marathon ruck, like 26.2 miles at the end of the month. So I might be doing that. Depends on timing with other events and stuff I got going.
Yikes.
But I forgot, guys, that I registered for a 12-hour rucking event I didn't even remember that I signed up for.
What was the story of that? Did you just be like, I want to sign up for that, and you saw you were already on the roster?
So the Jackalope Jam is something that happens every year over here, and it is run by Trail Racing Over Texas. Well, when they first, because I had done it last year and I did 6 hours of rucking. And then I was like, okay, well, I want to do this event next year. I'm thinking about doing the 12-hour next year because I, you know, did all this other endurance stuff this year. Mm-hmm. Well, they announced everything last April and said, okay, well, here are the dates for everything for next year. If you register now, you get a discount. And they announced that on Facebook, on a Facebook Live feed. Well, I was out and about at the time, but I still wanted to get the discount. So, like, I pulled up the Facebook Live, got the code, and then registered on my phone. But so many people were in there registering that the system, you know, bugged out. It went through, but I didn't get a confirmation email. I searched all of my emails and I never got one, but I was out and about. So, like, I forgot about it by the time I got home. And then, like, I don't know. I probably had a lot of stuff going on because in April was, you know, like when I was trying to recover from my dad being in the hospital and trying to, you know, ramp up through, I was in the middle of 250Ks at that point. And so, like, I had a lot going on. And I just, like, never followed up and just forgot. And for some reason, I never put it on my event list because I actually have a list on my phone and I add it on my calendar. So, like, you know, I put it somewhere, but I guess I didn't do all of that because it was so far out or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I went and I looked at it and I was like, oh, yeah, I was thinking about doing the 12-hour. And then I was like clicking around. Oh, hey, I'm registered for it. And then I had them resend my registration email because I never got the first one. And I'm like, oh, OK, I guess I'm going to go to this at the end of February. So, surprise.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's my life. So I'm doing the Resolution Ruck 50 miles by January 15th. I've already got 25. So no big deal.
No big deal.
It's all good. I'm also doing a 30-day yoga challenge where there's a different pose every day. You can see all that on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then I'm also doing CG Fit, which is the CG wellness challenge thing. And is that all the challenges I'm doing? I don't remember. I might be doing another one.
It's a bunch.
But today was a four-limbed staff pose. So there you go. You can see my cool pineapple shorts.
Yeah.
Pink pineapple shorts. But anyway, so I've been busy trying to get back into all the stuff.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Nice. Ben, you were alone with some dogs.
I was. I've also been playing Smash Brothers Ultimate, and I've been playing as the Wii Fit trainer, so I'm kind of doing yoga as well. That's been my challenge lately.
just a real balance focused kind of.
Yeah. The last week I had the house to myself. Everyone was still gone for holidays, so I was able to hang out with my dog and take care of her, and then go hiking on the Greenbelt and stuff, and it was really nice. But one of the hiking trails in Austin is flooded though from the rain from the last couple of weeks, so that made it a little bit harder to do, but it was still fun.
Nice. Yeah. For me, so Greta got fixed, or I took Greta to be fixed. And don't need to put that in passive voice. No, we did it on New Year's Eve.
End of an era.
Yeah, I know, right? 2018.
Because you couldn't stand anymore going into 2019.
No, it was really trying. It got to be about like a solid month of dealing with a cat in heat. And it was too much. Like I called and I got them to bump my appointment up to like a holiday because I mean, I think maybe I threatened to give her back, but I really wouldn't have done that. It was a bluff. But yeah, it was a lot. But she's fine now, and she's got a shaved belly, which is really funny. She looks mega goofy. So that's fun. Yeah. The other thing, we did the Patreon restructure that is going well. So
yeah,
people who haven't seen that from other shows, go check it out. There's you get new stuff for different tiers.
You made an awesome announcement video about that as well.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I like, it was super fun to go out to those different places in the wilderness. And also I got Shawshank in the background, which was fun.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yes, everybody's voice was exactly as it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
yay!
Credit to Gary for the idea on that. And it was, you know, work to execute, but it was pretty fun. yeah. So, I mean, that sounds like banter to me. I think we ought to talk about some video games and things like that. I see no reason why in this new year we shouldn't do the regular kind of show, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we can get started with
the brief.
The brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jollies, yours will probably be a little bit more of a story. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do mine because it's your standard Cole announces something kind of deal.
Sure.
So Humble is a video game store online. It's where a lot of people buy their Steam codes. They do their bundles and stuff. It's really diversified. Something that they have put out today, as we're recording, I believe, is that they are now selling Switch and 3DS games. So breaking into Nintendo, I got an email about this and I was like, because they had a discount coupon. This is not the first time they've done console stuff. Like, they've had PlayStation bundles in the past. And I think they sold like Wii U games on here as well. Weirdly enough, download codes for that. But this is, to my mind, a pretty big deal because it's probably, the most likely way that, any Nintendo game will be sold for less than full price.
Yeah. Well, I looked at what they've got on there, and they don't have a whole heck of a lot going on there right at the moment. But yeah. That's okay. Hopefully in the future there will be excitement. Like, this is just what's dropped onto it so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right now, most of the stuff that I've seen is, you know, at the price that you would get by going onto the eShop. So, you know, classic NES games are $5, you know, on here. Like they would be if you bought them on the system itself. But I think it's real interesting to see Nintendo break out of their own ecosystem like this, which is not something they ever do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then also, like, the Switch has turned into this indie machine for me. Like, I can get all kinds of indie games on the Switch, and I'm like, this is amazeballs, you know? Yeah. Like, yay! It surprised me a little bit the amount of indie stuff you can get on there as well.
But. Yeah. So this will be a way to get this here. Weirdly, it's US only. So I don't know what Nintendo's deal is with that, but I don't know. I'll be watching for those discounts. I'll be looking for like the Humble Nintendo bundle.
Yeah, for sure.
When it comes. Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Ben?
No, that's sweet. I second the idea of indie games coming out on the Switch. I noticed that Pipe Push Paradise actually just came out on the Switch recently as well.
Filthy. nice. Jala, why don't we go over to your story? I'm interested to hear what this is.
Yeah, so Rainbow Arcade is a new exhibition that's opening up in Berlin. And as the name implies, it covers LGBTQIA gaming history. Everything from Birdo to the recent Radiator trilogy, which I didn't know about, but it features an autoerotic, kind of game that is about pleasuring a gay car.
So that's why you said autoerotic. There we go.
Yeah, autoerotic.
That's Radiator Yang.
I
think we covered. He did like three games like this, maybe a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a trilogy. I was not aware of that. That flew under my radar. Yeah, I was aware of like the dating sims where you can date tanks or something like that, or whatever other random stuff there was. I did not know about this in particular, but now I do. I have been educated.
Yeah. So was that the one that was like stick shift where you had to?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not being crass. That's my recollection.
That's a legitimate thing that happens. Uh-huh. Yeah. So anyway, getting back to the show, though, Rainbow Arcade. So the show itself is set up like a giant rainbow, with each of the colors being a different section that covers the last 33 years through fan art, memorabilia, and video interviews with devs, and even some playable titles such as Caper in the Castro, which was one of the first explicitly queer games that came out in 1989.
It's a Mac game, like black and white. Yeah.
That game, you are in San Francisco and you play as a lesbian detective named Tracker McDyke.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
And you're investigating the disappearance of your friend, drag queen Tessie LaFemme.
Okay.
So I did not know about this, but this is really cool. There is a website called the LGBTQ Video Game Archive. Mm-hmm. And I just linked it. But Yeah, that might be fun to pick something there for Duckstream, possibly for next year.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, there is also an indie section in this exhibit with games like Queers in Love at the End of the World.
That's
and
an
Dominique,
anthropy game, yeah.
Dominique Pamplemousse. So regarding the fan art, though, one of the people who made the exhibit and everything were saying that fans are capable of finding representation where it's not publicly acknowledged or where the developers hadn't thought about the implications of what they did.
Yeah, shipping.
So, yep. Yeah. Well, shipping, but I mean, sometimes it's like really obvious that it's legitimately a thing, but they don't explicitly say it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I didn't mean to reduce it, yeah. But that's my like the my idea of like what a fandom. It's the most common thing that I encounter, I guess.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, that's Rainbow Arcade. It's a thing.
That's awesome.
And it's cool.
Yeah, the, some of the photos of the installation are pretty cool too.
Look, yeah, the photos. That's why I linked the article again, like a different article about it, so you can see some of the images and the press release stuff. So
yeah.
There was actually something that apparently was kickstarted, even, and there was a Kickstarter about it. So yeah,
yeah, that rules.
Yeah,
yeah. It's too bad it's on another continent.
I know. It's like, otherwise we could all go and see it, but
a level field trip.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'd be like, I don't know. Like, I
to Germany.
Yes. Ben, you're the only one who speaks German here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I would like a book about this, like a book about, you know, queer history and games. That'd be neat.
They might even be doing that with that Kickstarter. Possibly. Yeah. I don't know. You'll have to poke around.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And I was happy to find that archive as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of mousing around their mm-hmm. their nav here. There's a bunch of stuff. Like, they even have a list of mods for different games as well to like add same sex relationships and things into big games. Like, they've got stuff for Baldur's Gate and like a list of mods for Coder and Mass Effect and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Thumbs up.
Awesome.
I don't know that I have an awful lot to add. I'm just happy to know about it.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what did you ask the nice people?
I asked the nice people, what was the worst game that you've ever completed and why did you finish it?
We're getting some good stuff in here. Yeah, I'm already looking forward to it. The image that you posted, I like it quite a bit. It is Proctologist Simulator 2013, which appears to be like a real thing. Like, there's a person manipulating a prosthetic rear end here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm suddenly like turning into a 40s housewife. It's a prosthetic rear end. Oh my.
That is a-okay.
Yeah. It reminds me that there was an arcade game in Japan that was like based around poking somebody's butt. I think it was like not Oingo Boingo or something like that. Japanese butt poke game, incognito.
Yeah. Well, that's like a thing. That's like a thing. That's cultural deal over there. Like a kappa thing.
Yeah, it's a boonga boonga, which I almost didn't say because bunga bunga parties are what Silvio Berlusconi called his orgies. I thought I misremembered that. I'll take us in here with Roop, who says, Ride to Hell Retribution on the PlayStation 3. I just had to see if the game is as bad as its legendary status as one of the worst games ever suggests. Have to say, it's one of the most painful games you can ever play. Everything in it is just awful and rushed.
So part of this is like, I just thought about it after I saw Roop's answer and I started thinking, I was like, you know, this might be like creating abject suffering fodder to add to the giant list that you guys have of all the suggestions that never end.
Oh, of course. So. I didn't realize Ride to Hell came out on consoles. Like, I'm looking at this, it's on PlayStation 3 and 360. I thought it was like a discredited PC game that like you had to get on Ware sites. Neat. That's good to know. It's useful information. Thanks, Root. Let's see. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I got the game is no good. in 1998 for my PS1 due to a mix-up involving a magazine and my parents not understanding irony. It was, with Sensible Soccer 96-97, the only game I had the time, and I pushed through it to finish it. It's terrible. And then he links the video.
So it's based on a French comic series. I wonder, like, how much of that has to do with the fact that it kind of looks like is no good?
Yeah. Well, and then, too, like, from what I'm seeing, it looks like just like a, well, at least the beginning part looks like a knockoff of a lot of other games.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. So this is the continuation of Ollie's 10,000 hours. Yeah. Huh. I was not aware of that video game.
It looks like Claymation Aladdin.
Ugh. Yeah. It's weird because it just reminds me of a lot of other things that I've seen, even though I haven't seen that in particular ever. But
yeah. Oof.
Surprise.
Yeah. The frame rate on that is a nightmare. Yeah. I'm not normally like a frame rate guy, but just super choppy. It looks hard to control. Jella, what does Sam say?
Sam says, I played through the entirety of Sprung on Nintendo DS after the clerk at a game store gave me a free copy just to get rid of it. I don't think I've ever hated the characters in a dating sim more, and the game doesn't even have the decency to contain a bunch of graphic violence and or nudity. The one good part about the game was that you could use pepper spray at any point in the game, usually earning you a game over. The old screenshot Let's Play that Slow Beef did of Sprung way back in the day gets a lot of mileage out of this.
Oh man, I was looking for a list of all the characters in Sprung because I know there are some doozies, but yeah.
Oh, and then it's funny because Greg replies and says, I actually liked Sprung quite a bit. Maybe I just like bad games.
I don't know about that. Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember like that was infamous. We could never move any of that at GameStop. When I worked there. Yeah. Dating sim. It was like a weird, like a Western approach. Let me look here. No, it was developed by a Western. It was like Ubisoft. So a strange, like Western big publisher approach to a dating sim on the DS. They were half right.
Pepper spray.
Yeah. With pepper spray.
Yeah. Well, and then Charlie also replies, my only exposure to this is through the Let's Play, and the writing was unintentionally extremely hilarious when coupled with a lot of facial expressions. I feel like it's not fun to play, but it was very fun to experience secondhand. So.
Yeah. Austin.
Much like many of the things that you play on Hexcrank, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a service, right? People yeah. say, I don't want to play these games, but I'll watch you play them.
Yep.
I'm good with that.
Okay, so continue.
Yeah. Austin says, the worst game I ever finished was Bulletstorm, and I finished it only because my hatred for the main villain was so strong, I wanted to see how he died. But oh no, they made him get away in a spaceship in order to make a sequel. So I played through one of the most lackluster shooters ever for nothing. Damn bad Duke Nukem knockoff. Damn you. Man, I like Bulletstorm. Like the writing is execrable. Like they're like it's super misogynistic and juvenile, but like a hyper score focused shooter like that is super unrealistic and arcadey. I'm down for it. Not to contradict you.
Everybody's got their own things, as we well know, Cole, between you and I.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Everybody's got their own tolerances for different things. So it is okay to like different games.
Yeah. Don't worry, Austin, that won't make it to air. I'll cut yours out so you don't contradict me. It's fine. Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says Porky Pig's Haunted Holiday on SNES. I finished it because even though it was a bad game, my parents were low on cash and I wasn't ungrateful for it.
Well, that's good. Aww. That's a good reason to play a game like that.
Yeah,
it is.
I wasn't aware that there was a spooky Porky Pig game.
You might need to play it for Hexcrank.
Maybe. Oh, that does look kind of spooky. It's like walking around in a haunted forest. Huh. Well, I did not know that existed.
How do you know?
Jala, what does David say?
David says, some random 3D FPS shooter for the N64 I don't even remember the name of. Beat it because it was a rental, and if I didn't play my rentals enough, I wasn't allowed to get more in the future.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Spend all your money before the end of the fiscal year so we get our budget again next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious what this would be, because there are the usual suspects. You've got your 007 and Perfect Dark, but those wouldn't be bad. Maybe Turok. I don't know. But then you get down into like Hexen and Forsaken. Yeah, I'm curious. The world may never know. Jonathan says, I played and beat Peter Jackson's King Kong, the official game of the movie. Yes, that is the title. I realized the game is pretty bad and only took around 5 months to whip up, but it has some things that really speak to me. One, the game has unconventional mechanics, such as your character giving you an idea of how many bullets you have left with a push of a button, and being close to dying is displayed through an opera track that plays and begins drowning out the game sounds. Two, I love weapons that are aesthetically pleasing, like the Luger handgun and Tommy gun with a cylindrical magazine. I should note that you can only hold a single gun at a time, which evokes some survival horror elements. And three, there's dinosaurs. What more could you want? I remember playing that game a little bit. Like, it's by no means great shakes, but the first person shooter segments are fun. The beat 'em up playing as Donkey Kong ones are a real bummer from a butt.
I remember this was the game, like, when achievements first came out, that this had like really easy achievements. So people who are trying to maximize their score would play this game, right?
Yes, you would get all of the achievements by beating the main story. And the game is only like 4 or 5 hours long, something like that. I think this was a launch game too. And so that was a real big deal as well. So it was King Kong and also the Xbox Avatar The Last Airbender game, where there was just an option in the menu, I think, or effectively there was an option in the menu that just gave you 1,000 points because Microsoft had mandated you needed 1,000 gamer score within each game.
Yeah.
Let's see, Ben, what does Jack say?
Jack says, I don't want to throw shade at the entire genre of walking simulators, but finishing Everybody's Gone to Rapture was pretty painful. I finished it mostly because I knew it wasn't terribly long, and I felt compelled to arm myself with the knowledge that it wasn't good, because I had heard some pretty loud raving about it from some friends and other online sources.
I don't know. I like walking simulators quite a bit. Everybody's Gone to the Rapture isn't very good. Yeah. Yeah, no shade. No, don't worry about that at all.
No contradictions.
Dave is not on air, so he can't go. Yeah, so walking simulators.
right. So. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, Star Control 3. For the record, I don't think it's a horrible game. I'd rank it solidly in the meh category. But as the sequel to the amazing Star Control 2, one of the best games, period, it had big shoes to fill and came in woefully short. By the way, Cole, have you played Star Control Origins yet?
No, and I think I wouldn't be able to because they pulled it from sale.
Oh.
Yeah, because of legal, like weird. a good case study for the difference between trademark and copyright.
Mm.
Starduck got the trademark, but not the copyright, so they couldn't have any of the characters or subject matter or races or any of like the kind of content of the game, whereas the original developers got the copyright but not the trademark, so they can't call their new game Star Control. The original company sued Stardock and it got pulled down from stores, so who knows, it might just be a lost game. No, I never played Star Control 3 just because of its reputation. Christopher says, probably Spiritual Warfare for the NES. I mean, it's not terrible because it's a Zelda ripoff and you get to throw various fruits at heathens. Actually, never mind. It's pretty awesome. But still probably the worst I actually bothered to keep playing to the end. Yeah. Spiritual Warfare is kind of a perennial suggestion on AS.
Is it?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Ben, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, I beat the SFC Dragon Ball Z JRPG. What is SFC? Street Fighter?
Super Famicom?
Oh, okay. He says, I beat that in high school. In Japanese. A semi-impressive feat for somebody who doesn't read hiragana
or katakana.
but that game is objectively garbage. I was just at the age where you're desperate for more of your thing. Dragon Ball was my thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I played Dragon Ball Ultimate Battle 22.
I played the Slayers RPG for the Super Famicom as well.
Mm.
So, and the Violinist of Hamelin action game. That was actually pretty fun. And then also the Slayers RPG that was on Sega Saturn. Mm. I like Slayers.
Slayers, I'm not familiar with what that
is. It's an anime series.
So. Okay. Like Vampire Slayer kind of thing? Or
no.
Okay. That's my one guess. I use my one chance.
You used it. It's gone.
Oh, well. Let's see here. Michael says, I played and beat the PS1 The Grinch game. Oh, Michael. Oh, no. It had all the powers of PS1 ugly graphics, over-compressed voice lines, and mascot platforming / collectathon. But my sister inexplicably loved that game, so I kept playing it so she could watch. Okay, that's a redemption. I should read the whole thing before I react to it. That was very sweet of you to take that bullet for your little sister. Yeah. And then finally here, Ben, what does Charlie say?
Charlie says Proctologist Simulator 2013 was vastly inferior to Proctology Sim 2010.
Yeah.
Actual answer, X-Blades, an awful hack and slash with awful character design. Seriously, look at the cover art. I'm very sure the only reason I finished it is because this was still barely the era of game rentals and I didn't want to waste something I picked up. I think I was expecting something like Heavenly Sword. Even paying the rental fee on it was too much, honestly.
Let's see here. The X-Blades, it's most notable to me because when it came to America, there was a minor controversy over the fact that they censored the cover art. So if you go and take a look, outside of the US, the main character, who is a shapely anime lady, she's facing away and she's got a good deal of underbutt, showing. And in the American cover art, they cover her up. So... yeah, that probably speaks to it. It's like Blood Rain almost. Like it's a game that exists solely for titillation.
There's one more.
Is there? Yes. I didn't see it or don't see it. Can
refresh.
You read it?
I can do it.
Yeah,
I can do it. James says Sonic Adventure 2 on a recent replay, not even for the content, it's just a buggy nightmare. The whole time I played it, my only thought was that high pitched squeal movies use when a character is temporarily deafened.
Yeah, I remember like I wanted to get through to the end of that game, but even on the Dreamcast back in the day, it was incredibly finicky, like whether or not you would just fall through a platform or fall through a rail that you were trying to grind on.
Yeah, that's very frustrating. That's like one of the most unforgivable bugs is when you fall through the map and like have to restart.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, the collision map didn't match with the visible geometry. It was a real bummer. Yeah.
I think I told you guys about I was in the beginning, just like the little tutorial area for Sniper Elite 2, and I broke it and I fell through the geometry. Just the very beginning of the game, I already broke it.
Yay. Let's do ours. So mine is Beyond the Beyond, and my answer for that is Final Fantasy VII hadn't come out yet, but I wanted to play a PlayStation JRPG. So I borrowed a friend's PlayStation and their copy of Beyond the Beyond and beat it over the course of like a long weekend or something. Yeah, that's mine. How about you, Ben?
Well, since you said Beyond, that reminded me I played and beat Beyond Two Souls. That might be my answer. I was originally going to say Star Wars The Force Unleashed, but I think I'll go with Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah, that's pretty unassailable. I did it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was I mean about when the shine came off of the apple for David Cage for me, because like I was riding high on kind of the memory of Heavy Rain being good.
Yeah. Well, I had buried that memory. Thanks for uncovering that.
Years of therapy undone. How about you, Jolly?
You're gonna be surprised by my answer because it's not gonna be what you think it is. I'm going to say D&D, Eye of the Beholder on the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, dang. Yeah, that's the one you suggested for AS, right?
Yeah. And you guys are like, I don't understand why you think that it's a bad game. Okay, so I played and loved the Sega CD version of it with its cheesy voice acting and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, the puzzles and everything were really good. And the Sega CD version, I know it was, like, remade several times because it was originally on the SNES and was ported to Sega CD. And then it was remade on the GBA. But, boy... that game just is stripped down and just like compared to what I had played on the Sega CD, it was crap, but yeah. I had already paid good money to buy it mm-hmm. right when it first came out because I was like, hooray, I get to play this game again.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'm sorely disappointed. There's like none of the stuff that made that game good on the Sega CD. Like this is just plain Jane, boring, under animated, just mostly numbers and flat. Like it wasn't interesting. It didn't have any of the, you know, interesting looking, enemies or, you know, the kinds of points where you're in a dungeon and you're going around a corner and you're hearing like the shit somewhere in the dungeon close to you and you don't know where it is, but you recognize by the sound that it's the monster that kills you.
Yeah.
And like there's no puzzles and none of that stuff that like made it really cool. Mm-hmm. Like none of that was there. So like for me it's mostly comparison. I guess if I only had just the one thing it would be different and I would be like at least, you know, less upset about it. But in that particular case, I was just drastically disappointed because I know that they had capacity on the GBA to do more than what they did, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just like not really much effort on the developer's part to do much with it. So that's why I say that. I would not say VLR and I would not say what's the other game? Oh, Corpse Party Blood Drive. I would not say one of those two, mostly because I was... Like, there were parts of Corpse Party Blood Drive and parts of VLR that I actually did like. And, mm-hmm. like, I still have the third, Zero Escape game to play yet. And I am going to be playing it at some point. Not mm-hmm. right now, but sometime I will play it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that's a thing. But, like, I still wouldn't even qualify one of those as being, like, the worst game I've ever played.
Yeah.
So... I mean, like, I don't typically, if it is that bad of a game, I will put it down and not play it.
Oh, especially nowadays. You know, cut bait.
Yeah. Yeah. And like at that time with Eye of the Beholder, it's not even that I would necessarily say it's the worst game of all time that I've ever played. It's the worst one that I beat.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a tendency of beating a lot of games that I absolutely hate. Like there has to be something there that I like to keep going. Except in that case, that was before digital things. You know, digital
before stuff the like flood. Steam were,
yeah, before any of that stuff came out. And so it's like, no, I paid good money to buy this game right when it came out. And I was so excited. And then I was very disappointed. So, but I still played it because I was like, damn it, I spent all that money.
Yeah. So. I mean, especially just in relation to your expectation, like a bad port or a bad update or. Yeah, that's totally understandable. I think our bafflement at it being suggested to Abject Suffering was because neither of us had that Sega CD experience. I think Gary played the gold box version of that on the PC. I hadn't played any of it. And to us, it just kind of looked like a tactic, like a kind of bare bones tactical RPG with D&D rule set, which like, I don't know, sign me up. That's not bad.
Yeah, and see, like, that. I think that's the thing is that it was just so bare bones and it didn't have that kind of sense of actual adventure that I got when I was playing the Sega CD version. I don't know about like the PC version. I'm assuming that would probably be like the Sega CD one, but the voice acting was so crappy and it's not like I'm saying it was well written or anything, but like the game itself was really fun to play and the puzzles were fun to play and you felt accomplished every time you managed to survive a battle that was really hard or, you know, run away from the enemy long enough mm-hmm. to recuperate or whatever you were doing.
It just wasn't, wasn't the genre you were looking for.
It wasn't a dungeon crawler. Yeah. It was like something else and it was real basic and it was like, wow, this is not what I signed up for.
Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in with your answers. The next episode is going to be a free play multiplayer because it'll be 270. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thanks to Jala. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, when are we mentioning title of the year stuff at the end?
Yeah, let's save that for the end. Okay. Holidays just got weird. We're still in the year, but now we're not. Stinger.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm going to go first because I don't have very much. I left the Baldur's Gate 2 mines and went right to the Final Fantasy 10 mines, but we've got a little bit of a stopover because I used some of my Christmas gifts, you know, gift cards and such, to get a PlayStation VR.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
Now there are two of them.
two of them on the show. They had a sale, you know, just like a holiday bundle. And it was like down to the point where, I don't know, my curiosity overrode my kind of unwillingness to spend money on something extravagant. However, it's really neat. So, I mean, Dennis has talked about it quite a bit. I was surprised at how easy it is to hook up. It is a very surreal kind of thing to be standing in a room and like see your controller represented in VR or your hands moving around. Mm-hmm. It's like the community thing, like to calibrate the system, stare at your hands and wonder. It was very much that kind of thing. I was initially put off by the resolution on the headset a little bit. And also, this is super strange because my glasses and the headset will fog up, you know, just by being on there. Like I have to preheat the visor by putting it on my head for a little bit, so the temperature differential doesn't cause the thing. But like once you work that out, it's super neat to pop on. So I fucked around with a lot of the demo stuff, like Job Simulator, Res Infinite. All of that is super cool. The two main things that I have been digging into, one is Tetris Effect, and two is Beat Saber, which is one of the games that I got with the bundle. Which of those would you like me to talk about first?
I'm curious about Beat Saber. But
yeah, I was going to say Beat Saber.
Yeah, Beat Saber is really cool, you guys. So Beat Saber is a rhythm game, and you have your two move controllers, right? And in game, they're lightsabers, okay? And music plays, and because it's a rhythm game, you have these blocks that are approaching you. And these blocks, they have different colors, so they're red and blue, and they have a direction that you need to slice them in. And it designates which of your sabers you need to hit him with. So you can do crossovers and stuff like that. It's really convincing, like the force feedback on it. Like if you take the beams and touch them with each other, like both of them will vibrate. So it like the illusion is pretty good that you are in a virtual world holding onto these lightsabers. I know that's super dorky, but I don't know. I was way into it. The music is really good too. There are also blocks that you need to like move your head so you can move your character to get past them. And the overall effect is you are doing a kind of dance. It wasn't until like I took it off and just kind of like analyzed what I was doing, hitting, like moving my my lightsabers and moving my head and my body to a rhythm, I pulled off like, oh, that was a dance. It probably looked super goofy. I wasn't self-conscious at the time, which I think speaks to the game's credit, weirdly enough, that like, oh, it was like so immersive and the music was so good, and the mechanics were so kind of tight that I don't know, like it got me to put that aside. You know, any self-consciousness I might have had, if somebody was in the room, I would have been mortified. But it's super fun and like just the right level of challenging.
So are you gonna stream it then?
God no. Any questions about Beat Saber?
How does it compare to like Guitar Hero? Like, is it a similar type of zen that you get into when you're playing it? Or
I don't know about that. So Guitar Hero and Rock Band for me, I kind of give over to the dorky fantasy that I'm making the music as I play it. Mm-hmm. And so it is very much about like sensing the melody or sensing the rhythm and going into it. And that's where my trance comes from, and that's where my enjoyment of that game comes from. This mm-hmm. is kind of more along the lines of like a Theatrhythm, or like just like a dancing game. Like I never got too heavy into DDR, but it's, you know, you are kind of going along with it as opposed to having the sense of creating it. I've not played a high enough level to feel like I am executing anything of like extreme that involves extreme dexterity or endurance. Mm-hmm. But it's neat. It's like Rez or something like that, where it's, you okay. know, like a participatory, kind of thing, mm-hmm. participating with the music and the visual.
It looks sweet.
Yeah. It's great. Like I got that as opposed to like another bundle, because the other bundle didn't come with Move controllers. Like I didn't really know what Beat Saber was, but I fired it up and I was like, oh, this is great. So, way into it. Tetris Effect is great too. I've talked a lot about Tetris in the past. I love Tetris. Tetris Effect is, for people who are not familiar with it, it is a kind of a bare bones esque Tetris game made by the guy who did Rez. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but Rez, Meteos, Lumines, Child of Eden, things like that. And what this is, it is you're playing Tetris, and in VR you are, and I guess on the screen as well, it is making music as you play Tetris and adding in kind of this visualizer effect. It's not strictly a visualizer because the music happens and responds to how well you are doing in the game. And after a certain point, the music picks up and takes over and starts dictating the pace at which the blocks fall. So like mm-hmm. if something gets to a drop or a break and it really speeds up, you'll have to deal with that for those bars while it's going there. And the idea is, you know, kind of that developer's whole MO, which is a synthesis between visual, sound, and play that is super immersive. You really lose yourself in it. Like, it seems goofy to talk about how well Tetris works in VR because, I don't know, it's a translucent Tetris board that's right in front of you. But there are twisting galaxies and desert scenes and stuff playing out around it. And in case you're wondering, yes, I was on edibles a lot of the time while I was playing this over the holiday. So
so it's like the game developers are like, how can we make this awesome VR experience? Oh, yeah. And then let's just add Tetris on top of it. That's fine.
Yes. Yeah. So it's super good. And it gets to be a really, you know, challenging Tetris game because of that variable tempo kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And like the one mechanic that it adds is this idea of like, I forget what it is, like groove or trance or something like that. It's a meter that you build up and you can activate that and everything gets kind of quiet and muted. The blocks stop falling automatically, but you can trigger them to fall. Like they're going to come in the same order they would have. They'll be randomized like they were. And you're trying to clear as many lines during that as you can, in order to maximize your score. So that's a way you get like good, you get good grades is to play with that system. So like think of it like Overdrive in Guitar Hero or something like that, where it's a meter you save up by doing good. And then you can actually have to do better.
So between the two games, it's like you've been playing Guitar Hero then.
A little bit, yeah. It's super great. I really dig this. I'm excited to go a little bit further in VR. I've played Resident Evil 7 too recently, I think, to jump right into that in VR. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, I'm going to pick up Derisine here pretty soon, the FromSoft game. That's like a weird successor to Echo Knight. That is VR only, things like that. I'm excited. And there's just like a bunch of free games you can get, like demos and things, mm-hmm. or like weird little VR experiences. So I just like kind of like gruffled up a bunch of those and have been just kind of sampling around. But I want to keep it a little bit limited to Beat Saber and Tetris Effect.
Mm-hmm. You gruffled them.
Yes. any questions about Tetris Effect or final things about the PSVR?
No.
Yeah.
Excited to see what you play next.
Yeah. I'm excited to dig into it more.
Are you going to stream VR in general, like some VR game?
I need to find a way to do it. So the tricky part is, You know, it's easy to stream games when you don't have a huge visor on, because I can just sit at my desk and have my microphone in front of me. Like, I would need to get like a lavalier mic or a lapel mic, because, you know, certain games, you know, require you to like look around. And if I spin around, it gets kind of, you know, it creates problems.
Gotcha. But,
yeah. Stuff like that. So I'll try to figure something out, because there is, you know, good fun horror stuff, and I think that might be fun. If I did stream it, it would not have a camera on me with my dumb face with the goggles on, because I'm self-conscious and I don't want that to happen. but yeah, like I would do the social view. That is super easy to do. You know, just with the output on the PSVR.
Mm.
Yeah. Speaking of streaming, I streamed Parasite Eve over the holiday weekend. That was
fun.
You
sure did.
Yeah. Boy, that game falls apart at the end, and the pseudoscience is even funnier than I remembered it being.
Mitochondria has lost all meaning.
It's like mitochondria and Picross. Lost all meaning for Jala. So, but yeah, I don't know how much more I can say about that game that I haven't said before, except it is a super interesting evolutionary dead end for Square that it kind of rose to be more than the tech demo I think that it ultimately was intended to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't have anything to say, but I was in there.
Yeah.
I watched some of it. The end.
Oh, Ben, what you been playing?
Yeah, I got a couple of things. On the board game front, we played one game together. It was Time Stories, and then it was for Macy, right?
It was like the Macy case.
The Macy Stories.
Yeah.
That was really fun. It was better than the Dragons one, and I think it was debated on whether or not it's better than the base game that we played.
Yeah. So Marcy. It was Marcy, not Macy.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I just remember that. My contention that it was not as good as the module that comes with it, the Lovecraft Asylum one, mm-hmm. mostly because the Lovecraft one had a really cool meta puzzle that was used to solve the end of it.
That's true.
The Marcy one is definitely better than the D&D one. That sounds like faint praise, because the D&D one was real bad, but
yeah.
The Marcy one had some really interesting. Really interesting play gambits, I guess, that paid off in a way that was unexpected, except for, and this is a spoiler for the end, it comes down to a 1 in 4 chance that you did it right.
In our case, it happened to come down into a 1 in 4, 1 in 5 chance, mm-hmm. and we happened to pick correctly, so we had a good ending, but yeah. That's a little bit questionable of a game design decision. But
a little bit, yeah.
But who knows how other people's games go. And then the fun surprise too is that the storyline in general of the game is ripped right out of Resident Evil 2, it seems, so, as well as some of the artwork, so that was a little bit weird.
It's shameless. Like, you get to the lab of the evil corporation that is doing biological experiments, and it's just an umbrella, except instead of being a top-down view, it's a side view. Mm-hmm. It's even like red and white. It is mm-hmm. As shameless. I already used the best word for it. Sorry, guys.
It seems legally actionable, in fact. But we'll just brush that aside.
Yeah.
Other board game I played over break was this game called Mansions of Madness. And I played this with Dennis and his family, which is also my family.
Yeah.
It was really awesome. It was like it was almost like a D&D campaign, but there's like a board game component to it, kind mm-hmm. of. Like, there's an app that like kind of takes into account where your figures are and like what they've done, and kind of can react to it.
Hmm.
And so when we were playing with I think 6 people, and Dennis was the DM for it. So like he was controlling the app and was saying like, "There's a monster that jumped through this window. How are you going to react?" And then you have to either like fight or run and do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. Definitely seems like the future of board games might be this type of thing, where it's like a hybrid of having an app that has this brain that's controlling everything, but you have mm-hmm. a bunch of like modules that you can use and kind of get a good visualization of what's going on.
Yeah.
But
is this the one with madness effects that people can't talk about? Like
yes.
weird little mutators that are placed on your behavior at the table?
Yes. So, it's kind of like Cthulhu influenced. If you see enough crazy stuff, you get these like insanity cards or whatever. And if you get enough of them, it triggers like you to go insane. And mm-hmm. so then as soon as that happens, you're given a new game objective. And then that's what you have to complete to try and win the game.
Yeah.
And it might be like on top of what the group's doing, or it might be against what the group is doing. So one of them, like it can have like permanent effects on the game. So like one is like you can't speak anymore. Like as soon as you get mad, you cannot say anything for the rest of the game. And you just have to do your own thing from that point on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a lot of fun too. I think we had all but one of our people go mad, but then only one or two people lost in our group. So it was, you know, a mixed bag. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. Besides all the board game stuff, got some stuff on the video game front, especially with like Christmas gifts and stuff. I got Super Smash Brothers Ultimate for Christmas. And so I've been playing through that. I've unlocked a bunch of characters, and that's been a lot of fun. I'm still playing that with friends as well. Mm-hmm. Also, it works a lot better than I expected. I thought there was going to be problems with like using the two like Switch controllers instead of like a GameCube controller, mm-hmm. but I think it works fine. You can theoretically just use a single Joy-Con. That's pretty rough. I wouldn't recommend doing that.
Yeah, you technically have everything you need to do all your moves, except for taunts, I think. But I don't know.
Not a big deal, right?
Yeah. But it's still like you're holding onto a tiny Joy-Con. Like that is a real tough bargain, I think.
Yeah, it's tough to kind of like have the accuracy that you need for that type of twitchy game. And also the on the single Joy-Con, it's really hard to do the bubble, like the R and L, and have that react the way that you would normally want it to react.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Bubbles are grabs, right?
Yeah. So anyway, but I was surprised. Playing it just like on your own, if you just have like the screen and the Joy-Cons attached to it, it's perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
That's how I play it.
Yeah, I was happy about that. I thought it would be more difficult.
Do you have a character that you've gravitated toward, like a new one?
I don't know if I have like a main strictly. Some of the ones that I like Cloud. I like Wii Fitness Trainer. I don't know. Duck Hunt still fun. I don't know. I played yesterday with some friends, and basically every game I would try and pick a new character, so I haven't really settled on one, but definitely I'd say one of my stronger ones is Cloud, though. He just seems like a really strong character. But
the three characters that I wanted to play as: Simon Belmont, Ovs, Cloud, and Bayonetta. I've only gotten one of them, and I am super pissed because the game seems to be specifically withholding the cool stuff from me.
Yeah, well, it sucks because whenever a new character approaches, it's like, okay, you've been playing these CPUs level 6. How about a level 9 one to unlock character? It's like, oh no. So you have to do like these really cheap things. Be like, all right, how can I spam moves to like pump damage into this person? And like, how can I geek out a win? I too have not gotten Bayonetta. I fought and lost against her, and I was very sad about that.
Oh man.
Same thing with Snake as well.
Yeah. Snake's old news. I played him on the Wii. He was fine. He's real
still
cool.
Still want to be able to play him now, but yeah.
Duck Hunt's up B is really weird. Like those are the recovery moves in Smash, and Duck Hunt just gives you the ability of flight for a while.
Yeah. No big deal.
No big deal.
I love the duck button, his neutral B, which is like he throws out a can, mm-hmm. and then at any time you can press B again, and someone shoots the can, and if mm-hmm. someone touches it, it explodes.
Yeah.
It's so much fun in multiplayer, because it's all right, I'll just set this down here, go fight on the other map, and then you just have one eye on where the can is. It's like, oh, someone's going next to it? Oh, bam.
You know? It's so awesome that you leave a mine, and like I don't know, as a kid, I loved playing Duck Hunt and also Hogan's Alley. That's what that's from, is the Hogan's Alley game, like another lesser-known light gun game. So like you would shoot cans to try and keep them in the air, or there was a scenario where it was like, okay, shoot the criminals, not the good people, kind of deal. And that's the pixel dude who pops up in that. So like, Duck Hunt is not just Duck Hunt. It's like a weird little historical tour of Nintendo Zapper games.
That's sweet. I didn't know that at all. No. And the Splatoon people are really fun too, with the paint mechanic. Mm-hmm. The basic premise of their moveset is you can cover other people in paint and then you do more damage towards them. So they have a kind of, they're, what's really cool about the game in general is every, every character is like pretty unique and they kind of have like their own strategy of like how to win. I think it's more true with like the later characters, maybe even with the earlier characters. Mm-hmm. Like they have like, they've done a good job of making like really unique movesets and really like unique strategies with like how and try and beat the other people. So yeah, so I'm having a great time with that. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it's a good party game. So if you ever get friends over, it's like a great thing to fire up. So mm-hmm.
Are you engaging at all with the single player like World of Light stuff? Or are you just rocking?
Yeah. So I actually started that a day or two ago, and I love the opening. I love how
how overwrought it is.
I love who your opening character is and the context of why you're playing that character. It's yep. like, that's great. That is that person. That's lovely. Yeah, that seems pretty fun. I haven't dug too deep into it yet. I maybe pussed around in it for like a half an hour or so. Yeah. But yeah, that's cool. But in effort of time, I want to get to the next game real quick. The other games that I've been playing have all been PC games. Mm-hmm. And so the first one is I got Stellaris as a gift, on Steam.
Uh-oh, we found a Ben hole.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I put my safety on. I'm like holding the edges so I don't fall in the hole. thankfully I spent like 2 days playing it over winter break and I didn't have anything else to do. But I'm good. Like, it's okay.
You sure?
We don't need intervention.
Okay.
So it's a grand strategy game, I think is what they call it.
Yeah, it's Paradox. It's like a 4X, but with extra like civilization management stuff on top of it, right?
Yeah, it's basically like Space Civilization. Uh-huh. Is the way you can think of it. It feels very akin to like Age of Empires. Like it feels very similar to that, where it's like you're doing a lot of managing of a bunch of different things to try and get resources and control your borders, and then you eventually are spreading out and you have to like fight other people, you know. It has like a very similar feel as that type of game. What's nuts is like the size of the board and like the size of the number of races is like so huge. I played on the absolute lowest setting I could, and yeah. It's still a significantly large game. I don't know. It's a fun game. I've only played, I think, two games, and I've only gotten, like, I'm maybe, like, halfway through or so. And the games have been mostly, like, learning the mechanics. It has a high learning curve. Like, you need to go watch YouTube videos before you can play this game.
Yeah.
Because they just dump you in, and they have, like, a paperclip-type assistant or whatever mm-hmm. to try and, like, guide you through a little bit. But even then, like, you don't know how to play the game when you just start up the game, which is like weird. It's weird that they made it like that. You know, like at least with like Age of Empires, they had like a campaign that you could kind of go through to figure out the mechanics like one by one.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything like that in this game. So there's like a lot of Googling you have to do to be like, all right, how do I like mine this resource? Or like, how do I do diplomacy with these other people? You know, like once you start butting into other people.
That's Paradox's jam. You know,
yeah, to hide the rules of the game from you.
Yeah, they did the same thing with Crusader Kings, and because this is Crusader Kings in space or Crusader Kleebnorts, you know, like it holds true that they would do that again.
I do. The mechanics are sweet though. Like, there's a lot of like cool things you can do. You can make your own race from the get go, and there's like a lot of different things that you can play around with. Like, you can make a lot of like creative type strategy races. So like. You can make one, you pick all the attributes of your race. And it's like one of these things where it's like, there's negative ones and positive ones and you have to pick five and then the total has to be +2. So you can pick like a sweet, you know, +8 type thing, but you have to take like a couple minus fours or something like that.
That specifically is really reminiscent of like Master of Orion, where like you could, you know, like there were races that came out of the box, but you could pick their traits. And like, if you chose the trait silicon based, you know, you were rock people. And you could like inhabit more planets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But everybody hated you because you were so alien. So it was like a huge social hit. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the type of thing you can affect in this one, right? So habitability of planets is a trait, either in a good way or a bad way. You can pick either one of those. Mm-hmm. How likable you are to other people, you can pick either one of those as like a trait. You can pick one thing that's interesting is you have like leaders like who run your government. So you have a single leader who runs your government, but then you have these like science leaders who are running your like explorer ships when you're like searching new galaxies and stuff. And you can pick traits based on their lifespan, whether they like are, you know, like a race that's fleeting and they only like have a lifespan of like maybe 20 or 30 years, or they're like venerable and they have like a lifespan of like 80 or 100 years.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of cool mechanics and a lot of cool like strategies that you can kind of play. it seems.
Yeah.
So I've only played two games of this, and even then, like, I haven't finished either of those. One, I got to a certain point, and then I got wrecked because I figured out how combat worked. and then the second one, I put, like, dumb AI, few people, smallest map or whatever, and, like, I got to the point where I'm definitely, like, the biggest person in the galaxy, so it's, like, clear that I will win it. But then I have to spend like another like 6 or 8 hours if I want to actually win the game. And it's like, I don't want to do that. So, yeah. So I might play around with it some more. It's a sweet looking game. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't want to spend an entire day playing a single game. Yeah. So,
and it's crossed that paradox threshold for me. Like, it came out and it was just the base game and that looked like too much. And mm-hmm. now there's a whole bunch of, expansions for it too.
Okay.
Which raised the barrier of entry to me as well. So I'm excited to know somebody who has the patience to kind of get through that probably.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, yeah, as a sweet mechanics, like, it seems really cool. I just wish there was a way for it to be like a bite-sized game. To be fair, to their credit, they do have like a timer on the game. So like, the idea is you can control the game speed if you want. So you could just set it to the fastest like time if you wanted to, try and blow through it. The problem is like, you're kind of at a disadvantage then, cause your reaction time is like a little bit less if you're playing out of that speed. Yeah. So a lot of times you can kind of toggle if like there's nothing going on, you can set it the fastest speed, or you can like pause it if you need to like set up a bunch of commands at once.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like a really cool game. I don't know how much I'll play it, but it's definitely respectable. If you're looking for something like an Age of Empires game, then that's totally for you then. All right, I got two more games. The other game is I finished Pipe Push Paradise.
Filthy.
I know, sorry. I was going to not say this if Dennis was on the air, but since he's not, I'll just say there's like two endings after the regular game, which I didn't know about until I beat the game. Or there's like two more additional maps that they like added on after the game was released.
Okay.
So it's like two different patches because people like the game and stuff. And one of them introduces new mechanics, like a new puzzle solving mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one's just kind of like challenge maps.
Yeah.
But they're really like satisfying puzzles for, you know, like the first island. The second one's really cool too, like showing a new mechanic. I was able to beat that one without like looking up anything. I was able to figure out stuff. The one with the really challenging one, two of them I had to look up the answers to, and one of them I feel particularly salty about because it's a mechanic that is only used in this puzzle, and it does not, like, there's no point where they teach you that that's a mechanic. It's like an interaction with some of the pipes with how you roll them, I guess.
Boo.
But yeah, that was a really charming game. I'm kind of bummed that there's no more content for it, but that is an awesome puzzle game, so I highly recommend that. I'd say I like it even better than Steven's Sausage Roll because like I think it's kind of like a simpler, less painful version of that game, but still has like complexity with like the puzzle design. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it. Good. Probably not the best game to stream since you're just sitting there like looking like an idiot for like 20 minutes and then you get something. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
All right. Last game I got is I picked up Hollow Knight on the Steam sale.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I put about 9 or 10 hours into it. I'm very proud of myself because I know it's supposed to be like a Souls-like type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're supposed to get frustrated with it, but I've like not stop playing it, I guess. So yeah. So I'm making progress. I'm trying to be patient with it and trying to like keep trying and stuff like that. I've explored like maybe 4 or 5 of the biomes or worlds that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten, I don't know, I've probably gotten maybe like 3,000 gems over the course of the entire game so far, or 3,000 points or whatever. Story is like kind of whatever. It's I think the art style is really strong. The mechanics of like moving around and stuff is really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the art style's great, the characters are great, so I don't know, it's a fun game so far. I think the runtime of it, I thought it was like a short like to beat time.
No, it's pretty big.
All right.
Yeah.
How do you know like how many biomes there are or how many like areas there are by any chance?
More than 10, but less than 20, I think.
Okay. All right. That gives me a good gauge then of kind of how.
And then, okay. So there's a caveat to that, which is a lot of that has so my information might be outdated. I played it back when it was I think just the base game and maybe one challenge area afterwards. They've added new stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
So
they've added like free DLC or patches, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like with That's just cool. the base game, you get like new playable characters and stuff. Yeah. So looking on How Long to Beat, like it puts main and extras at 33 hours.
Okay. All right.
Like worth it. Like it's an amazing game.
Yeah. It's definitely fun. You do get a little bit of satisfaction once you figure out how a boss works and being able to beat it. Mm-hmm. It does give me the same sort of anxiety that Dark Souls did of like, if you die and all your resources go to one area.
Right. Well, then you die, all your resources become an enemy that fights you when you go to get them back.
Yeah, but he like doesn't, he hardly ever does damage to you. It's a glorified pickup spot, but there's a lot of anxiety in like, well, I can't die on my way to there now. No. Like there's one thing I was trying to save up money for that cost $1,800 or 1,800 whatever units are in that. And so that was like affecting how I played the game in terms of like, I'm not going to go explore this area because it looks too dangerous and I don't 100% know if I could get back there.
Yeah. It just like that kind of game forces you to constantly pull risk and reward.
Yeah. And one thing that's been funny too is I've just a strategy of, all right, I'm going to attack this thing, like immediately attacking something, even if you don't know how it works. Like I haven't had another game that's like made me that aggressive before. So I thought that was interesting that I picked up that trait playing the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's been fun. I do like the mechanics of like things like, if you're in the air and you swing downwards and hit something, you can bounce up off of it. So you can use that to kind of like juggle yourself, or you can use it to like cheese and attack people.
Yeah. They work that into platforming in really satisfying ways later. It's like a Zelda 2 style deal.
I've reached one biome where that has an effect where,
you need to stop talking about Hollow Knight. Cause I just want to go play it. you don't need to stop talking about Hollow Knight, but
what's funny is it would have been worse because I was looking at it and then I was like, no, I have too many other things I need to play right now. I'm not going to get that one. It would have been worse.
I'm happy you like it, Ben.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes, how it progresses. I don't know if, I don't know if the story has any payoff or anything like that, or, I don't know. I got to the Hollow Knight statue. That was interesting, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, the story is good and affecting for what's there. It is a soul style thing where it's mostly about background cues and things like that. You know, you are going to like a ruined civilization and walking around, beholding its works.
Yeah.
Cool. All
right. That's all I got.
All right. Jala, how about you?
Okay, well, I'll start by saying I actually played a board game because I had family in town over the holidays. Neat. So we played Escape the Room. This is a series of, you know, room escape board game type things where basically you have a cue card that sets up the, you know, scenario, and then you've got physical packets and you open up the first packet like when it indicates, and then that has like physical pieces that you can use to puzzle through and, you know, figure out how to unlock this safe or do whatever. Like, you know, here's all the stuff, the contents of the room. You've got the safe, you've got this combination lock thing over here, and then you've got this desk and whatever. And then like when you open this, then, you know, you can progress from there, that kind of a thing. It has it to where like basically as you open up each of the different packets as you progress through the game and unlock different things. Sometimes some of the pieces from earlier that you picked up, you know, are still in play. Like any of that stuff can be in play. I was told by my sister and brother-in-law that with the series, there was one point where they were playing one of these installments and part of the game box itself was in play for, you know, one of the, puzzles that they had to solve.
Neat.
So, that was pretty cool. But we were trying to play that when my niece and nephew, who are 2 and 5, were like, you know, off in the side, you know, hoping that they wouldn't pitch a fit because this was past their bedtime.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know, and then like my mom was trying to stay up to play it with us because my sister really wanted all of us to play it. And so, like, you know, my mom was really tired. So it was kind of like a struggle for part of it. But it was kind of funny because my niece, who is 5, ended up helping puzzle together a couple of the different things because, you know, she can manipulate the pieces and stuff, too. So she was messing with it. And she solved a couple of the puzzles for us while we were doing other stuff.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool. So, yeah, fun for the whole family. And they even have like an online hint thing where like you can pull up their website for hints, you know, like hint number one, stronger hint, more, you know, an even stronger hint, blatantly telling you what it is if you really need to use that.
Nice.
So they do have that aspect as well. But anyway, so that was a lot of fun. Played like a room escape thing. And you will find this very funny. I was talking to my sister about video games because she's the reason I actually ended up ever getting Steam is because of her. And I actually got back into video games and playing with people because of my sister. So the reason I'm on this podcast
nice.
Is
tell
my
her
sister's
I said thank
fault.
You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she had just finished playing. What was it she played? I forgot. Anyway, we were talking about one game that we had both played. And then she was interested. Oh, I think she played The Room. And she was interested. She had been told that she should try Danganronpa. And I was like, no.
Too much.
And here's why. Because my sister is not into anime or anything like that. And knowing my sister the way that I do, I was like, no. I don't think that one would appeal to you as much as, say, you will like this. 999.
Okay.
Nine hours,
yeah.
Person's nine doors, because she likes room escapes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like some wacky, you know, bug nut stuff, but it doesn't, like, I know if you think the characters chafe on me, you don't even want to know. Like she also played Doki Doki Literature Club, and she liked that one.
Okay, so she like she has tolerance for visual
she
novel
has
stuff.
A little, yeah, she has a tolerance for visual novel stuff. She has a little bit of tolerance for anime stuff, but not like the biggest tolerance for
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
so
it's not infinite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was just like, I think you should try 9 hours, nine persons, nine doors, because I think she'll dig the room escape part. Like her and her husband play room escapes all the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, she likes that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, so I recommended that to her.
Do you know how it went over, or you
I
get
have no
to
idea.
Report?
She just like, we were talking about it over the holidays, and she is now starting up another semester of school, and she's also otherwise caring for the kiddos, trying mm-hmm. to get them back to school. So I don't know if she's picked it up just yet. I'm sure she'll tell me eventually when she does. So.
Yeah.
I will tell you when I know.
Neat.
But on that note, so Escape the Room. Any questions about Escape the Room?
No, I'm happy to hear that you have fun with them.
Which campaign did you play when you played?
Dr. Gravely's something. I don't know. Dr. Gravely's whatever. I don't know. Whatever one says Dr. Gravely on it is the one that we played. We got locked in some kind of health resort, but it was like actually a place where he was conducting human experiments, and we had to rescue some people and all kinds of stuff. So
that's sweet that there's like 4 different campaigns in the game as well.
Yeah, there's different things. And then there's also like you can escape now, or you can solve some extra puzzles and save this other person and get like the good ending, you know? So so that's cool. Like there's also quote unquote alternate endings as well. So yeah, I played that.
Nice.
Probably if they come back this year, you know, or whatever, then we will probably play another one of those at some point. But anyway, second thing, I finished Danganronpa 2.
Okay.
So I think the last time that I talked about it, I was in chapter 4. I don't remember exactly. I think I was like almost to the trial or something in chapter 4.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go ahead and talk about like, you know, just generally how I feel about it to recap. And then like I'll talk about a little bit abstractly about the ending. Mm-hmm. So I'll say that this game started really poorly and then it ramps up.
Yes.
And the original game, as opposed to the original game, which started out okay, got really good and then petered out near the end for me and like started making me angrier and angrier with the war of attrition against the boring, like the trials got boring to me in that one.
Yeah.
At the end. And then the character I absolutely can't stand taking the forefront at the end of the game, mm-hmm. like that just like made me so mad.
Who was that in DR1?
The villain.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So this game started out pretty badly and incrementally got better. And then it kind of like leveled off a little bit closer to the end. But then at the end, it began ramping up again with some turns that it's okay. But by the time the game stated what those turns were, some of them had been really bleeding fucking obvious from the environmental clues.
Yeah.
So some of those turns, because there are several of them, were completely unforeseen, though, and made me feel like, oh, snap, your last trial actually has a super severe consequence to it, right? That's made, oh, it's got a consequence. Oh, yeah. I actually started getting excited, right? But then they brought back a character that I absolutely hate, and they brought a bunch of them in from the first game, actually. But the one that I have zero tolerance for from the first game that made me so mad came over. That one came over, and then it became a big deal at the end of this game and pretty much wrecked the ending for me, because very end of the game totally undoes that sensation of impact that it builds like 2 seconds before then. It's like bomb drops, bomb drops, bomb drops. Never mind. None of that stuff matters, because power of humanity, power of friendship, bullshit. And so that made everything working out magically okay at the end of the game piss me off so much. I was mad all over again at the stupid game. The ending of the game, however, did not make me want to throw my Vita, because one, I was kind of expecting it to do that shit anyway. But then also the first game's ending just came across as way more irritating to me than this one did. Yeah. Like I was already set up for this one before I got to it, right? mostly I was mad at this one for having so much potential, right, that it squanders. And so the writers can obviously set up some great plot twists and murder mysteries, but then there are sometimes these really boring trials and then these cop-outs to the genre tropes. That just slays me, because I'm like, I know you can do better than this, guys.
You just did better than this.
You just did better than this, and then you just took it and threw it out the window. What is wrong with you? You know, so I was playing this game originally because there were things in the first game that I really liked, and I wanted to see continue, because I did like Danganronpa, the original game, for like the first half to two-thirds of it. Mm-hmm. And then what I wanted was for this game to take and run with the potential. And because, you know, like everybody was like, this game is so much better, I was like, okay, maybe it'll get better. And maybe it'll like at least end, if it's going to end with some kind of a tropey thing, maybe it'll like end on one that is decent, like all right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, like one that you haven't seen a bunch before, or one that is not like saccharine and bad.
Yeah. And like this one was less bad than the first one ended for me.
Yeah.
But it still fumbled, you know? And so, like, when you find out who the kids on the island really are and where they are, it's great. Okay. Yeah. So the where they are thing was really obvious before you're told, and they sort of overdid it on the environmental storytelling, in my opinion, because it got really old by the time you were finally told the thing.
Yeah.
But
the ways that they hinted, though, like, even though it's really weird to say that something that gives it away, it adds to the mystery, but like added to the overall sense of like prisoner like weirdness to it, that it like supremely worked for me.
See, that didn't work out for me. I was just like, okay, I've seen this like five. You don't need to do this particular screen effect anymore. I fucking get it. Like, come on, we can move along now. Come on, hop along. You can fucking do it. You know, so. The word despair, by the way, has to be added to Picross and
Picross mitochondria and despair.
Yeah. Mitochondria, Picross, despair. Yes. So anyway, a huge problem. All right. That's continuing from the first game for both of them, for all of them so far, is that other than the potential that gets dropped over and over again, is that the premise of the tragedy to begin with is pretty dumb. Mm. All right. How the game says it comes about and who just magically happens to hold the power makes no sense. The idea of the tragedy is a good one, but the trigger is piss poor. You can't tell me that this nutso character with absolutely like no charisma whatsoever at all can sway everybody in the world to be insane and depraved. That's just BS, because a group, even a large group, sure, I mean, take current politics, for example, but the rest of the world is looking at it like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I'm not on board with that. I am not willing to abandon, you know, like
you're not willing to cede that ground.
Yeah, I'm not about to suspend disbelief on that, especially because, like, I have not seen anything from that particular character who is supposed to hold all of that power that makes me believe anybody would follow that character. So, and also, I maxed out my social link with Fuyuhiko, and he gave me his underwear. And that's just real weird.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway, like, apparently that happens with any of the characters that you max out your social link with. You just get a whole fucking collection of everybody's underwear for no reason. Okay.
Yeah.
That, like, there's not even, like, any logical explanation for why that happens. Like, I mean, like, okay, if this is like a token of their affection in their head and that works for them, all right. But, like, that, unprompted, just being handed the Yakuza boy's underwear is like, what? Excuse me? Like, somebody would get punched if they ever handed me their underwear, like, out of the blue. What is this, you weird creep? Like, what are you doing? So, anyway, I settled on liking this game all right, but I'm closer to the neutral side of the like scale, thanks to all those issues that I've already mentioned about the tragedy, the cop out at the end, about some of those other things. What I enjoy, the stylization, the music, the soundtrack is like way better than it has any right to
be. It's so good.
It is. It's great. So some of the mechanics, okay, the free time interactions, the social link stuff, except for the underwear, the base trial mechanics, although some of those mini games within the trial, I really, as I've said before, I feel like they need to relate more to the actual actions and processes of a trial rather than just being, here's Hangman for no reason. Some of the plot twists and stuff, those are things I like.
Yeah.
What I don't like, the insistence of falling into every trope hole on Earth.
Yeah.
Down the path. And catering to the lowest common denominator and not giving any credit to the gamer for any intelligence to be able to pick up anything. The lack of relevance of some of the elements like the Tamagotchi and some of those, you know, minigame trials. And then, of course, we've talked before about my tolerances of certain, you know, archetypes or things like that, that I've seen so much of that I just don't have a tolerance for those particular archetypes or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So, all of that said, though, if the third game in the series is generally considered to be decent, I would not be opposed to playing it eventually. Not right now, but like in a year or 2 years after a very long break, and preferably having been given the game or finding it on sale for dirt cheap, because I would not expend over much in order to have mixed feelings again. However, I played this because, you know, so many people were like, this one's so much better. And yes, I agree. The Danganronpa 2 is better than Danganronpa 1. Mm-hmm. I do settle on the like side of the scale. I do think it's a little bit better paced and everything once you get past the beginning part.
Yeah.
Still does some falling down, though, which is unfortunate. But, you know, it is what it is. So.
We're going to be real vague about this. What did you think of the last killing?
I'm trying to remember the last killing.
I'll put in some censor here.
See, I don't like what they did with the main character and who the main character is.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of that is pretty flat.
Yeah.
And so the involvement with that sucks. Now, like, the way that they had that last killing, you know, play out, that was tolerable, you know. But there were a lot of other things going on that I didn't like that were surrounding that. So it didn't feel as gratifying to me or whatever, you know, which is, I know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But, like, that did not feel as gratifying as I would have otherwise felt about it.
I'm happy that you got through to the end. I'm happy that you, you know, liked.
I played it consistently.
What's that?
I played it consistently. I didn't even set it down for a long time. I actually played it regularly until I finished it.
Yeah. The plot twist and kind of just the weirdness and let's just say fuckedness of that was the thing that like really made me say it, like really made it pop and come to life for me. I'm happy that it sounds like you liked those with like being a local maximum as opposed to a global maximum. Yeah.
So there are things about it that I liked. There are things that I did not like.
Yeah.
Again, with the ending, the particular characters who pop back up again, even though they were supposed to have been gone,
mm-hmm.
like that was stupid and that made me mad.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like the recurring character from the first game that came back that, you know, wrecked the ending of the first game for me
mm-hmm.
and came back and wrecked the ending, like the feeling of consequence for the ending of the second game for me.
Yeah.
I did not like, you know, just several different things about the ending for sure. So I don't know, but like, there's still enough going on in there. There's enough pieces in play that I actually still enjoy that. It's like, you know, not like I'm going to spend $1 million on playing another entry in this series, but mm-hmm. like if somebody were to give it to me, I would play the game. I wouldn't just like let it, you know, sit in my backlog forever. It would sit in my backlog for a while because everything does, but
yeah.
you know, I would get yeah. to it eventually.
Fortunately, I don't think you'd have to pay $1 million. I think it's like a $25 game.
Right. So yeah. And what's funny is that most of the things that I predicted about it when I was first talking about it and having my suspicions, most of that stuff I said came true. Mm-hmm. The character that I was, you know, dead set that I was convinced was going to come back did not, although that's that line that I was like, they're not going to let that drop. They didn't let it drop. They brought that back up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it functionally, it still ended up being the same equivalent.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, so that was Danganronpa 2. Any other questions about that, or can I move on?
I don't have any questions.
Well,
I don't have any questions.
well. So, do I have time to talk about one more? And I guess I'll have to leave the last thing for next time.
I think so.
Okay, cool. So, the last thing I'll talk about today is I picked up and have been playing Octopath Traveler again. Remember, I played the demo and I played mm-hmm. my max 3 hours and then I stopped. So my main character is Therion, the thief, and I do not regret this decision. I love Therion. I like his character. I like his like power set or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always want him in my party anyway, so it's great. As soon as I started up the game, I immediately changed the voice over to Japanese, and I am so happy that I did because I like everyone a lot more now. I hated Cyrus with the passion when I first started playing the game, and then like I got, because the demo is English only, mm-hmm. I got to switch it over to Japanese, and now suddenly like I'm like, oh, he's not so bad. And like I just out of curiosity's sake, after I got everybody, I switched over to English for a little bit, and I was like, oh no, I need to switch it back to Japanese. There's like, again, there's a lot of liberties taken with the translation on this game. And there are a lot of things that I pick up, a lot of nuances of language that I pick up and characterization that I hear in their voices and what word selection that they're using that I don't get out of the English version. So, yeah, I've enjoyed listening to the voiceover. The Japanese voiceover is very good.
Nice. It's good, that they give you the option.
Yeah. English one. I mean, some people like it. There are some pretty bad voices in there, though.
Yeah.
anyway, so I put in about 37 hours, guys.
Wow.
37. And I'm still playing. That's about the time that I start petering out. So we'll see what happens if I'm setting it down soon or what. I have obtained all of the base classes as secondary classes and assigned every character a secondary class. I have two more characters to run through chapters 2 stories. Otherwise, every like 6 of the characters have already been run through up through chapter 2. I also have been doing a bunch of the side quests, and I have to say this, the side quests are great. None of them overstay their welcome. They are just long enough to get a breakup of activity without being so long as to get irritating. I like the fact that some of them allow for different types of resolutions to the same problem. Like there was at one point somebody that I, that was like, beating up some old guy, like giving a hard time to this old guy. And like, you can either go and challenge him and then like beat him in a fight and then, you know, like resolve it that way. Or like, I actually ended up reloading it because I had wandered to one of the other towns and there's like an amnesiac girl. And if you have her following you around, because there's like two or three amnesiacs for some reason, and like you just have to find who they belong to. So I just started picking up amnesiacs when I found them and just taking them around to see who they belong to. And you can actually bring her. And then turns out that, oh, they're sister and brother, and you can resolve it peacefully with the, you know, them being reunited or something. So that's cool. What I like about it, though, is that you need to actually talk to all the townspeople and pay attention to what they say in order to get clues about the side quests, because something somebody says in Sunshade might have something to do with something going on across the map somewhere else, you know, like in wherever the hell the Boulder City or whatever is.
Is the writing interesting enough to compel you to pay attention, or are you paying attention only because there are clues?
No, there's actually interesting random stories with random purposes. Like there are some things that are like fetch quests, but it's always like a different type of scenario and a different, you know, like it's not always like, oh, I have to go over here and buy this item and then come bring it back to this guy. You know, like it's necessarily something like that. Sometimes you have to figure out a puzzle to figure out, you know, a way to get them something that will work for their needs, you know, or something like that. And like basically your apothecary guy and or your scholar have the ability to either talk up, you know, be very friendly with and talk up somebody to get information or to scrutinize them and then learn about them from studying them. And when you do that, there's like this little description that pops up about like who they are and what their stuff, you know, whatever their situation is at the time. And every single one of these is like detailed and interesting. And it's like throwaway text that you don't even have to read, but it's there if you want to. And I totally, you know, do that to every single person in town and just spend a while getting to know everybody in every town I go to, see what the situation is, see what information they've got, because sometimes, like I said, you can solve somebody else's problem in some other town by talking to people in this other place halfway across the map. So, I've been enjoying the writing. I've been enjoying talking to all the people in the villages. Like it hasn't gotten old or boring. It doesn't feel like, you know, by and large, most of what is being said is throwaway text. It feels like, you know, it's got a reason, you know, it fits somewhere, you know, like you don't have to engage with all those side stories, but you get money and you get items from doing that that help buff up your characters. And so it's really beneficial to go ahead and do all of those stories if you have the ability. Nice.
Who are you running in your party?
I toggle between people all the time because I keep everybody evenly leveled.
Okay.
So, it just kind of varies depending upon whose story I'm on and what level everybody is. Cause I basically take the lowest level characters that I've got at the time. So I have different combinations of parties all the time as a result of that. So, I wanted to say though, too, that I was surprised that I actually like all of the main characters, because I really thought, that I wouldn't like some of them, like the warrior dude or the healer lady, because they're like stock standard character archetypes, you know, like all of them are, but like, I'm not particularly usually a fan of the healer or the warrior, but I actually enjoy their personalities. Like, even though they are your standard, you know, okay, she's kind hearted and he's an honorable knight, you know, the interactions with the others show them to be more multifaceted rather than just one dimensional. Like Ophelia, the healer, for example, is looking for something in the underbrush with Primrose, who is the dancer. And Primrose, the dancer, wears revealing side slit pants, you know, like belly dancy pants. And she's trying to find, like, Ophelia is trying to find a way to tell Prim that maybe she shouldn't be walking around in the underbrush because she's going to get all cut up because her legs are exposed. But, you know, this is really true. I know, because I've been I have gotten into brush thanks to my sister wanting to go geocaching when I'm like you know, just got home from belly dance. Anyway, like, I know from experience that shit happens and it sucks. But Ophelia the healer doesn't want to feel like she's, doesn't want to sound like she's criticizing Prim's attire. So she ends up not actually explaining herself. And instead she's just like blushing with embarrassment because she just doesn't know what to do. And yeah. She just gets like, she's just embarrassed. And she's like, how do I even say this? Blush, 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 you know? Yeah. And Prim's like, okay, whatever. And she goes off and does her thing.
Yeah.
At another point, Therion the thief is asking Ulbrich the night guy how he, you know, he, the warrior guy, would approach entering this guarded mansion that the party has to break into. And Ulbrich gives this sensible response about finding the weakest point and exploiting it. And Therion was like, oh, I thought you'd be like a frontal assault kind of guy. And Ulbrich's like, yeah, well, if I needed to be a frontal assault guy, I would be. But, you know, honestly, I'm kind of interested to see what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And he, like, the knight is actually interested in learning from the thief rather than criticizing him for being a thief, even though he is an honorable knight, you know? So it's like the companions actually get along rather than just playing bit parts and playing into, again, those tropes, you know? Yeah. Like, they've got archetypes. They really could be leaning into them, but they're not. Like,
it's really interesting. I mean, like, it's not something that generally happens, at least not in the vintage of JRPG that I play, where characters listen to each other as opposed to kind of saying their appointed lines.
And that's the thing, is that these characters really do listen to each other and seem to consider each other, you know, like legitimately think about the other ones, you know, like, and what would be the best for them, and like worrying for each other and things like that. So, but anyway, so far my favorite characters are Therion, of course, and then Cyrus, who is the scholar guy, who I thought I would hate him when I first saw him because I just couldn't stand him at first, but he ended up turning into this crazy goofball of a guy who's like, he is so into being a scholar that he like, he is so into knowledge that he is just like, does not understand how to communicate with other people in society normally. Like, you know, he will just say stuff that sounds like he's being real suave and, you know, trying to put the moves on one of the girls or something. And he's just like, no, it's just a fact. Can't I just say my opinion? And then they're just like, you get in trouble, dude, because you keep on just popping off and you're handsome, you know, like, you know, and whatever. And he's like, oh, and at one point he has this whole melodramatic moment where he's like, oh, I am cursed to never understand the full depth of my beauty or something like that. You're just like, what in the hell is wrong with you, bro? And it's just really funny.
Yeah.
But the girls, actually, Ophelia, the healer lady, is my favorite. And then Primrose, the dancer lady. So, but I actually like all of the characters to, you know, in their own ways and, you know, all of that as well. Nice. So right about the time that I was feeling limited by the class specialization and stuff is when I started getting the secondary classes. Like, I stumbled across the first one of the, because there's a shrine you have to go to, and it's like the shrines for all of these different classes are along the road between towns as you're going to like your chapter two locations and things like that. So you just kind of have to wander the map, and while you're wandering the map looking for treasure chests and stuff, there's also like extra caves and extra bonus areas you can go to that I haven't been required to go to yet. They're just there that you can go poke around in if you want to. And I think that's pretty cool because I like to explore. So it's giving, it's incentivizing actually looking throughout the whole map, not just with treasure chests, but with other things to do. There are random people, sometimes people who you need to help that are out in the map. They're not in the town. They're out in the map somewhere. You know, and then there's also, like I said, those shrines and things like that. Apparently there are shrines later on that have new classes that I haven't seen yet as well. I just haven't gotten to those areas yet because I'm not high enough level. But I've been having fun with the secondary classes, toggling between all of that. I don't know if I'm 100% satisfied with my distribution. You can only have one person at a time assigned to any particular secondary class. So you can't just make everybody a secondary healer or whatever you want. You have to, you know, pick which one, and then like you have to unlock skills for that secondary class as well. So it's also a matter of like spending your skill points and like how do you want to use those. So yeah, it's been fun.
Nice.
And also, as you might imagine, from me being Therian, I steal everything.
Of course.
Everything.
That's a good way to play the game. Yeah.
Nice. So,
I didn't even realize that the different colored chests meant that some of them were locked because my main guy is Therian. So, yeah. Like, I always have Therian, you know? Like, I always unlock all the chests. So anyway, yeah, like I've been having fun with it. I've been enjoying it. I have not been slowing down at all. I've only slowed down this last weekend because I was kind of busy, you know, rucking forever.
Running 20 miles. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, no big deal. I think it's, I mean, I don't have too many observations about this. I think it's funny that the provocatively dressed dancer, her nickname is Prim.
Yeah.
That's a good language joke there. But other than that, I'm just happy you dig it.
Yeah. I've been having fun with it.
Your JRPG tear is extended for longer than I expected it to.
Well, I wasn't necessarily going to jump back into a JRPG. I don't know. I guess it was because I think Octopath was on sale or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was like, well, I already started it and I want to play it, you know, so yeah. I'm just going to go on with it. So I really kind of figured I'd be switching genres by now, too. But I don't know. It continues. Like, we'll see how long I go on this before I end up getting tired and then wanting to stop. But so, like, Ben, if I remember correctly, you were saying that in the later part of the game, it felt grindy or something. There was something you were not having fun with later in the game. What am I getting into?
Yeah, there's like a couple level 3 quests that I was not able to beat. And then some of the level 4s. So there were like 2 level 3s that I couldn't get through. And then everyone else was on their level 4 quest. So that's kind of where I dropped off at, but hopefully that does not happen to you.
We will see. I mean, I like to explore and I like to do the side questy stuff. So, it might be one of those cases where like, I don't actually have a problem with what level I'm at. It might be that possibly because I am wandering around so much and not necessarily immediately going from quest to quest, but, we will see what happens with that.
Nice. Is that everything?
I have one more real short one if you want me to talk about it. Otherwise, I can wait.
Go ahead if it's short. I think we've been away for a while. Okay. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay. This one's called 3/4 Home. It is a short interactive fiction. I want to say I paid a couple of bucks for it on the Switch, like the Nintendo eShop. It is basically a touching story about a girl and her family after she moved away and came back due to basically falling on some bad times. And you play as the girl and she's on the phone with different people in her family while in transit to go wherever she's going. And you select how you respond to questions and statements by whoever you're on the phone with, like your mom, your dad, your brother, that kind of thing. And how you respond changes how things play out. And I obviously can't say too much about it because that's like the point of the whole thing and it's very short. So, I will say that it struck a chord with me. Like a lot of the interactions felt really familiar and like real, legitimate, you know? So it's a good little game, real low intensity, you know, like you are just selecting things, you know, responses to stuff on the phone. And that is how it goes. And I want to say it's like an hour or two. It's not a very, very long game whatsoever. It's like a real short experience, but it is definitely something that I enjoyed.
I like the visuals quite a bit.
Yeah. It's got some interesting visuals to it as well. And basically, like, for part of it, you are driving in your car. And so, like, you have to hold a trigger button to make your car drive in the direction because you're basically trying to go back home and you're on the phone with people from your house at that time.
Dangerous.
As you're driving. Well, they're doing that because there's a big storm that's happening. Yeah. So they want to make sure that you are okay.
Right. We need to make sure you're okay. So talk to us on the phone while you're driving. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then the second section of the game, you are walking around waiting for a bus and it's kind of like a prequel to what happens, you know, in the first section. Like it kind of reverses, like time backs up and then you see what happened before she moved back home and that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So, And like basically you just get to walk back and forth waiting for the bus. And the bus will actually come and then leave, and you're still on the phone and you haven't gotten on the bus because you're still in the middle of your conversation yeah. and that kind of a thing. So yeah, like low intensity, but an interesting little experience. And, you know, like I would say even, you know, fairly well replayable too, because you might want to go back and see what some of the other responses would trigger, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah I would recommend taking a look at it if you have time.
Yeah. Looks neat. Little interactive fiction game. Cool.
That's it.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
New Year's buttons.
The credit.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Level. This episode in particular, but, you know, if you've listened to others, that's cool, too. We appreciate you taking the time. You may be wondering, hey, last episode, you talked about the Title of the Year award. We're extending the voting just because the poll didn't go up at the proper time because of holidays and stuff. So we will talk about the results of that very self-indulgent practice next week, or in the next episode. I haven't even looked at the votes yet, so I don't know if there are any front runners to speak of. But yeah, we'll keep those open for you as well. So go to our social media channels and you will see the link to that. It's a brief survey. There's a whole bunch of entries on it. So it is the longest survey. but we appreciate you doing that. We redesigned the Patreon. There's not an awful lot that affects this show aside from the presence of the ability for us to do kind of like off topic stuff in the Duckfeed Presents kind of channel. So if you want to do any spoiler casts or, you know, the tabletop kind of stuff, we talked about doing that. That is probably where that will land. Thank you, everybody, for your support on that. The warm reception that it has gotten has been really nice. And we appreciate that. Otherwise, tell your friends, rating reviews. You know the stuff. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay. Good. Well, what's that, Ben?
I said no.
Yeah. Well, I need to go feed my cat because she is baffled at me for sitting in the same spot for 8 hours.
You need to feed yourself as well.
Yeah. I haven't had dinner. I had a couple of donut holes that were left over from a visit to my parents. I don't know how I'm still alive. Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I'm Jalachan in places.
And I am Ben Merkel. Merkel will be on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. So we can take some, we can take contenders, but I think there really is only one that can be, which is Picross, Mitochondria, and Despair.
I had Mitochondria, Picross, Despair, but it's essentially the same thing. I also had two other ones other than mixing that up. Mm-hmm. I had Snake's Old News. I played him on the Wii.
can I shorten that to Snake's Old News?
You could do that too. All right. Also, we found a Ben hole.
I'm going to stylize that with an exclamation mark. Okay. Ben?
I did not have any titles.
Okay.
I took this week off, guys. I had no news story and no titles.
It's really weird how there's always one of us who does that. And when two of us do that, it's a disaster. Yeah. cool. How do we feel? Do we want to make a case for any of these, or is Picross, Mitochondria, and Despair good?
Picross, Mitochondria, Despair is fine.
Oakley dopely. Yeah. Cool. Well, I need to go. Oh, yes.
Oh, quick question. Did we post the toady on the actual Level Facebook page? Because if not, somebody needs to do that.
I will do that.
Cool.
I don't believe that we did. So I'll,
I did not. So if Dennis did not, then nobody did.
Okay. Yep. I can put it out.
Groovy.
Awesome. Well, take care, everybody.
Get foods.
Yeah, well.
Good night, week.
Yep. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.